Welcome to the I Spy with My MyoEye podcast. I am your host, Brittany Murphy. I am a certified oral facial myologist, registered dental hygienist, and lifelong learner. My goal with this podcast is to bring you up to date in current literature and expand your knowledge of oral facial myofunctional disorders so that together we can get to the root cause of the problem. You ask, we'll answer by collaborating with true pioneers and specialties associated with the myo world. Join me on this journey as we dive into the life-altering world of tethered oral tissues and airway space. Let's do this thing. Quick disclaimer, all content expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the speakers and is for informational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Because every person is so unique, you should always consult with your specialized healthcare professional. Dr. Weddle graduated with a Doctor of Dental Surgery degree from New York University College of Dentistry. In 2007, she was one of the youngest dentists to have been awarded a fellowship in the Academy of General Dentistry, receiving this prestigious designation before the age of 30. Dr. Weddle has sought postdoctoral training in the following fields in order to provide her patients with a more diverse and personalized plan to fit their individual needs and desires. Pediatric dentistry, implant dentistry, cosmetic dentistry, and orthodontics, including Invisalign and airway dentistry. She is highly trained in dental sleep medicine and sleep apnea management, TMJ treatment and management, and focuses on the reconstruction of the worn bite and dental occlusion. Integrating these advanced dental concepts and technologies with old world caring and compassion is the hallmark of Dr. Weddle's practice. She is known for her down-to-earth manner and for her passion in continually improving the technical delivery of her dental care. Good evening, Dr. Weddle. I'm so excited to have you on. I've been wanting to have you on for some time now. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brittany. I'm so happy to be here. I'm glad that we can get our schedules together.
Yes, absolutely. So let's start by having you just share with the audience a little bit about yourself, how you came to be an airway-focused provider.
So I'm a general dentist in New Jersey. I'm in private practice. And very early on in my career, I got into the airway world by getting into adult sleep apnea treatments, you know, the oral appliances and things like that. So I got into that through that venue. But also, I was a family dentist. So I was seeing a lot of patients with worn dentition and, you know, taking courses, pinky, spear, and things like that. You try to address their comprehensive need. Right? So we're looking at patients from a comprehensive global standpoint. And I realized that, you know, sometimes I apply the principles of building the worn dentition, fixing them. And sometimes they work, mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't work. And when they don't work, patients are breaking things over and over and you're fixing things and it's aggravating to them. It's, you know, it's kind of mind boggling and also embarrassing. And also like you lose stomach lining as a dentist when that's happening because your work is failing and you can't figure out why. So I got into airway through that too, because, you know, realizing that those patients have worn their dentition for a reason. And a lot of times we can fix the dentition, but if we don't address the cause, the root cause, then they're still going to continue wearing whatever it is that you place there. So, that's my intro to the airway world. It kind of came like in different directions. I thought I was just taking a continuing education course for sleep apnea because I love taking continuing education courses. And then all of a sudden I'm taking continuing education course from full mouth reconstructions. And then the two worlds collided because they were connected. Yeah.
You know, it's so funny, not funny that you say that, but I always bring up this particular patient. Like I shared with you earlier, I was a dental hygienist before I became a myofunctional therapist, and I'll never forget this one particular patient. And every single time he called, we knew he was calling because he broke a crown. And we would always say, like, okay, what's Mr. So-and-so chewing this time? Like, is he chewing on rocks? Like, what's going on here? And it was almost like a joke. And like, now I think back to it and like, nobody ever asked him about his sleep. Nobody screened him for, you know, sleep disorder, breathing. I didn't know anything about it at that point in my career. And I'm just like, you know, and I'm sure we all of us in airway have that moment where we're like, the light bulb goes off and you're like, oh my gosh, I want to literally go back to the last however many years and re-see all those patients and,
right,
you know, see all those things that I missed. But We don't know what we don't know until we know it. So, here we are now, and now we know it. So that's good. Now, let me ask you this. Did you start Airway with pediatrics, with just adults? Like where did you first dive into?
So I did it with adults
Okay.
first because, the diagnosis of sleep apnea and everything else. And actually, I was also managing TMJ problems in adults. And so I also started separately again, taking orthodontic courses to offer to my patients because, again, family practice. I had a very, my primary practice was blue collar practice, and their families and generations that come to the practice and they like to stay in the practice. They don't want to go to specialists unless absolutely necessary. They prefer to be in the practice, and they're really comfortable with the team. Once the patient gets to know the team and they speak their language,
Oh, yeah.
my base was Filipino and Spanish, and we had team members that speak. I'm Filipino, I speak Tagalog, and my team members speak Spanish, and the patients are really feeling very comfortable and at home. And a lot of them expressed the feeling that, if we can manage it in the practice, they would prefer that. Right. So
Right.
I was taking orthodontic courses separately again because I was seeing things that I wanted to see whether I can fix earlier on in my children and then refer to the orthodontist at ortho age, right, at braces age. But then I was starting to see adults with TMJ problems that we were kind of helping with changing the position of the jaw, and then the sleep apnea patients with an oral appliance that were using a mandibular advancement device. And then those exact patients have children that are in my practice that are developing these things that I'm seeing in the adults. And I'm like, wait, instead of an appliance, can we do orthodontics to try to like get that jaw forward? Can we try
Right.
to, take the TMJ into a better position, see that whether the condyle can be in a better position? So things like that kind of started. And I was always fortunate that I had that perspective of the family practice
Yeah.
because I could see the parents and I could see the children, and I know the history, like periodontal disease, right? From a hygiene standpoint, if I have a child who has gingivitis and I know that the mom and dad are like severe perio patients, I'm gonna be a little bit more on top, and I'm gonna give much more education and much more attention to that child than a child who had gingivitis because, I don't know, a piece of popcorn got stuck in their gums,
Right. Right.
So yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about how it can be a bit more difficult to diagnose sleep disordered breathing in children than adults.
Yeah, and it is one of the things that is difficult, and it's, I don't want to say controversial. It's not controversial in terms of there's an airway issue. A lot of the physicians, so I work with a lot of sleep physicians, and we have this discussion all the time. The guideline of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine is very finite. It's very defined, right? So unless you fall in these guidelines, the physicians can't say that there's sleep apnea. They can say that there's a sleep disordered breathing, and that is, in itself a diagnosis. But then sleep disordered breathing, a lot of insurances in particular, they don't really have any approved therapies for that.
Right.
But it's hard because a lot of times in children, it's very the airway manifestation is not quite there yet. The body is not sick. Right. So if the body is not sick, it's not going to allow the child to have an apneic episode where the body has stopped breathing. What's going to happen is that that child will have an arousal. The body will wake up the child because all the sensors in the body is still intact, and the child's body is able to kind of notice or detect that there's an airway issue. And before even some of our machines can detect that there's an issue, the child has already woken up. So there's an arousal there, but there's no respiratory event, right? So that's one thing. I think one of our instrumentation might need to catch up. Our definition might need to catch up too of what's detrimental because, when we're seeing symptoms in children, and then if we say, okay, there's no sleep apnea technically, but then we address airway things, we can try to improve the airway, and then the symptom improves, then there might be some kind of connection there. that we need as providers of healthcare, as somebody in charge of somebody's well-being, we should really pay attention to, and we can kind of figure out what can we do to help this child, especially if they're symptomatic.
Absolutely. Now, I know you had mentioned that you network with a lot of sleep physicians in your areas. Are the GPs and like the pediatricians also caught up to speed more in your area, or how's that been? Because I know everybody struggles with like building that team and that network, and there's always one picky, one of those providers that just can't seem to like let go of like what they learned in school and like just accept anecdotally like these things are helping these children.
There's one of the biggest topics, so I'm part of ASAP Pathway. I'm one of the co-founders of ASAP Pathway, and ASAP stands for ASAP, Airway Sleep and Pediatrics Pathway. And we work with dentists to try to incorporate pediatric airway management in the practice, continuing education and all of that stuff. And one of the biggest questions is, how do I build a team? How do I build a team? Who do I talk to? All of that stuff. Well, ENTs and sleep physicians, they're usually on board. They understand the connection, and they're looking for dentists, right? Where it's not the other way around. But very early on in my career, I managed children, and I saw this child with huge tonsils. Their teeth are really worn down to the fact that it looks like they were doing their own access to their own root canals.
Oh my
Right? I
gosh.
can see like pulp tissue
Yeah,
like
wow.
peeking through that very thin shell of dentin. I wanted to be part of a team. I wanted to be a team player. I wrote to the pediatrician, and he had huge tonsils, huge kissing tonsils, everything, like all the signs, like dark circles under the eye. The parents complained that he doesn't sleep well, all of that stuff. And then, so I referred to the pediatrician, and I was hoping that the pediatrician would make the referral to the ENT or the sleep physician. But the pediatrician said, "Oh no, everything is fine. He'll outgrow the tonsils, right? The tonsils, he'll outgrow them, and everything will be fine." So long story short, it was kind of shut down. Nothing was done for the child. The child continued to have the problem. And my office was starting to go into an airway route. So my hygienists are really well versed in speaking. And I think my hygienist, we all get excited, right? Once we see this and we feel like we can help the patient. So I think that my practice lost that patient family because we were trying to, address a need that they felt like was not a need, right? So it's one of those things that's a struggle, building a team, because it can lead to a lost patient family, right? If you refer to somebody who doesn't share your philosophy, and even say they have no idea what they're talking about, right? So instead of just saying I don't agree, like shutting you down, which some do. Right, I'm sure in your career you've experienced that. So pediatricians are tough because they have finite times, especially if they take insurance. It's one of those things that unfortunately the insurance does dictate the business model, and they don't have a lot of time. So if they don't have a lot of time to talk about it, or there's a really good research that says even the physicians who have time to talk about it, who are aware, even the pediatricians who are aware, when they ask the patient and they get a positive answer, like they're snoring or they're not getting a restful sleep, the pediatricians have no idea where to refer the child to, right? So if they have a problem with that, like they don't know what to do, why open that can of worms? So it's been hard to get a pediatrician, on board, because a lot of times the ones that are on the leading edge that actually took the courses, the sleep courses, and that they're aware, they found that it wasn't worth it because they kind of was they were left dead in the water because they have no idea how to get this child the care that they feel like they need. So it's kind of like a bad snowball. So because of that, I think that sleep and all of that stuff got a bad reputation, and then it probably spread through the pediatric community, where it's kind of like, yeah, but we don't know what to do. And that's kind of what the paper found. And it's an older paper, so I'm hoping, and I'm seeing actually pediatricians starting to get much more interested.
That's
So
great.
it's turning, the tide is turning, but pediatricians, it's a hard group to get into.
Now, what do you do? Like, let's say you're working with or one of your patients is seeing one of your local orthodontists, they've gone through, phase one palatal expansion, you see them and there's not really adequate room in there for their tongue. How do you kind of handle that? You do expansion in your office, they're already seeing this orthodontist. Like, what kind of conversation do you kind of have with the orthodontist where you're not necessarily stepping on their toes, but like, kind of like, not like, hey, we need a little bit more room here.
That's a super, super hard thing, and it's a very specific kind. Like it changes, I guess, based on who the orthodontist is, who the patient is, what your relationship is with the patient. I just try to give my observations to the parents, and I will definitely reach out to the orthodontist and just say, "This is what I'm seeing. What are your thoughts?" Right? And sometimes the orthodontist will say, "Yes, I agree, but this is what we have now, and I'll address it later." Great. And then sometimes I'll say, "Do you think that we can do some myofunctional therapy while you're waiting?"
Yeah.
So, and a lot of the orthodontists are like, "Whatever you want to do, go to town,"
Yeah, well, that's
which is
great.
kind of
That's great.
nice, So if I don't have enough room, or if I don't feel like I have enough room, as long as I feel like, the orthodontist has heard my concerns, and that, they are looking into addressing it into another phase. We know that in kids and managing kids, and in managing adults, you can't do everything all at once, right? There's such burnout is real, and sometimes patients and parents can only wrap their heads around so much, right? So there's that one factor also. So they also have to manage that patient as their patient, and they have to manage, in addition to the clinical factors, they have to manage all of that other things, because they have a long-term relationship. They're seeing that patient every month for so long, right? So they have a very close relationship, and they can kind of gauge what that patient and parent can wrap their heads around. But I'm a big proponent of, if we can create some space, and especially if they've already created some space, okay, we can do some myo. We can change the function a little bit. So we're always saying myo, in patients, we're always saying, if a patient gets, I don't know, something on their knee done, or something on their leg done, a lot of times it's like a no-brainer. They understand that they have to go to PT, right? It's like the surgeon did something on the bone or on the joint. They changed the structure somehow, and then now we're addressing function, and the PT is the next stop. And they know that it's kind of can be hard, and it can be uncomfortable, and that's kind of like myo. It's like we're changing structure, we're changing bone, we're changing anatomy. Why are we not changing function? Why are we not addressing? Maybe we don't have to change it. Maybe we can make it more optimal. So that's kind of always my go-to. And that conversation with the orthodontist gets a little bit easier when we know that we can contribute to their success. Yeah. And they understand that. They just don't want to do it. A lot of the orthodontists don't want to do
Right.
it.
When you're doing pediatric expansion, do you use like a fixed RP or using a removable appliance?
Case by case specific. So and the same thing, we teach this in ASAP. It's our philosophy, actually. There's no one thing that's perfect for everybody. And it can be the most perfect tool, but if your child or your patient is not going to use it, it doesn't matter. Or if they absolutely hate it, that every time they come, it's like complaint, and they are having a miserable time, it's just not worth it, right? So sometimes it's better to get some results, because they're going to use the appliance and have a good experience, and then they'll be more cooperative and do other things like Mayu, versus doing something that is going to work very well, but then it burns them out so badly and they don't want to cooperate because you've given them a miserable time, and then it's like, I'm done. Yeah, so yeah, both. We use both.
And what about do you, if you put in an upper expander, are you always putting in a lower expander?
Not always, right? But if the molars are tipped inwards, it's one of the things that it's a good idea to help out with the uprighting of the molars. So yeah.
Now, something I'm really excited to talk about with you, because I know it's one of your specialties, is TMD, because a lot of people don't like to treat TMD because of its complex nature. And I feel like when we talk about TMD, like we're so focused around like adults. So if we can talk a little bit about like your experience treating pediatric TMD, you know, what is the youngest age that you've seen issues with? And like what types of things should dental practitioners, hygienists, other, you know, dentists kind of be on the lookout for, because I don't feel like it's something that is typically screened for in pediatrics.
Right. And, when we talk about TMD, we're talking about a lot of the adults are symptomatic, right? So they already have pain or they have limited opening, things like that. And in children, they rarely have pain unless it's trauma induced. So, that's actually one of the things that we can keep an eye out, especially, as a general practice dentist and, pediatric dentists, mom and dads, caregivers. Kids fall, they have spills, and they do hit their jaws. And the jaw joint, the TMJ, is a growth center. So if it does get injured, sometimes it can impact the growth of the jaw and the joints. So the retrognathic mandible, sometimes, we're seeing that it's a result of trauma from when the child was younger, and the discs have been displaced. Right. So in the TMJ, you have the ball and socket kind of thing, right? So your ball and socket and your disc is in between. So you have a pillow between two bones. And if the pillow gets popped out, and it can be very easily popped out with any kind of trauma, especially when the child is younger, everything is very soft. And if that pillow pops out, then you're changing the development of that jaw joint and therefore the jaw itself, the mandible.
Now, what about too? Like, I feel like adolescent females, there's a lot of TMD stuff going on. Can you talk a little bit about that in your experience?
Yeah, so adolescent females, the females, right, in general, are more prone to having TMD, and I don't think it's because of the structure, right? So if you look at structurally, I think it's pretty even. Males and females can have some structural changes to their TM joint. The females do tend to have more elasticity, so ligament laxity. Right, because we're kind of built for childbirth, and our joints are built, like to pelvis are made to open. So we have all of those hormones running around our bodies, especially at kind of like once we start childbearing age, right, which is kind of like late teens, and that's kind of when you start to see TMJ issues popping out. So you have that, and then you'll also have hormonal fluctuations, which, teens, and then in the 30s again, right? So those are your demographics, and then again, like right around menopause. So those are your TMB markers, in terms of time frame for females. So females have that, and then our hormones too. I think we have more receptors
Of
that,
course we do.
yeah, right, that allows us to feel the pain. So it's not that, it's not that everything is off and different. It's just we're feeling it more. We're just more sensitive. I don't know if I'm gonna get shot. I get all letters. It's like females are not more sensitive. Stop that. Stop saying that. No. But yes, the statistics do show this. But yes. So a lot of times what I'm seeing in the teenagers is that it's, we have, I don't know what it is. I think it's our diet. It's how we eat. We have smaller jaws now. And a lot of times our maxillary arches are not as developed as they should be. And the mandible is kind of tight up against that maxilla. And because of that, sometimes we, Quoits or Spear, when you go to these continuing education courses, they call it like a limited envelope of function, right? And a lot of times, a lot of that mandible moving forward is not, we don't have enough space to have that move. And a lot of our condyles are distalized, when we look at the CBCTs. When I look at CBCTs of my patients that have sleep apnea and also that have TMD problems, right? So that's one thing. So a lot of times I think we're seeing that because of that high hormone change, right? So that's And then also with teenagers, they're not growing as much. There's a drop off of growth hormones in that area. And growth hormones, I think growth hormones is like miracle stuff. It's just whatever damage, like, if you have a young child and they damage your TMJ, but there's growth hormones there, they can repair things very quickly. They're not feeling any pain at all. So, yeah, so I think it's just the confluence of time where the growth hormones go down and then the other female hormones go up, and then you do get more sensitive to that pain or symptom of
Now,
T.
if you're with your TMD patients, and again, I know I'm sure like every patient's different and there's no like one set protocol, but as far as like, so a lot of these TMD patients oftentimes, have underdeveloped jaws. So like, what is typically your protocol as far as like putting them, do you put them in an orthotic first and then expansion later? Like, what does that look like?
A lot of times orthotics work very well, and if orthotics can handle it, and especially two things actually, you've got form and then you've got function, right? So just because the form is limited, sometimes if the function is ideal, you won't have pain. Or if you can do some kind of cognitive behavioral therapy where your patients are not clenching so much. There is a concept of 1% occlusion where if we can get the tongue on the roof of the mouth, lips together, teeth apart, if we can get that and the teeth are not always clenching down, sometimes we find that we can mitigate the symptom. And that might be enough, right? If we can get behavior and if we can get some kind of support at night, sometimes it has to do with the airway we're finding, right? If there's an underlying airway issue, if we can manage all of that stuff, we don't need further intervention in terms of orthodontics. Some they want orthodontics anyway because their teeth, they want their teeth to be more aesthetic. And there are many ways that we can now address bone, change bone, right, depending on the age. So MARPI is one of them. The MSC slash MARPI has been a game changer for a lot of orthodontists. So they're able to really build that along with a reversible face mask, really pull this forward and allow a little bit more room for that mandible. So that is one of the things that's almost like a go-to nowadays, and it's become really predictable. From a perspective of teaching the technique, I don't teach it, but I coordinate the course for ASAP. So we've had the course now for the last, I think, 3 or 4 years, and the protocol has changed over these 3 or 4 years, and the success rates have been just skyrocketing to the point where I think there's no failure anymore. We
Oh,
have
how
the technique
fabulous
is
is
so
that?
honed in. Yeah, before we were saying to patients, we can't guarantee that you're going to get an opening. Right. And now, because of the protocol and the way they are managing things and also customizing the actual expander, like with a MARPI, there's like almost 100%. I think I'd like to say 100%, but I hate to say 100%. Right. But I know my members are all reporting opening, Ilya Lipkin, who's our instructor. He's taking all of these results, and they're wonderful. And I think it's very predictable now, because of all of these things that were that have been put in place and have been developed in the protocol.
Now, what is like the is there what am I trying to say? Is there an age at which you wouldn't recommend Marpy?
They have done so. I don't do MARPI, right? I refer to the orthodontist. I refer to Ilya. Lucky me, Ilya is in my
That's fabulous.
So there's really not much drive for me to learn it, because I have Ilya right there. But so they've done it for all age ranges. So
Incredible.
it's not necessarily an age thing. It's more like a medical condition kind of thing, or previous history of surgeries or plates and things like that.
Now, as far as your TMD patients go, where do you find myofunctional therapy coming into play? Like, do you recommend it from the very beginning? Do you wait till you get everything seated in a better position? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I'm a big myofunctional therapy believer. And my background is actually in dance, right? So
Oh, so
background is in
cool.
dance, and my sister is a fitness model, and my sister did a lot of her fitness development and changes through diet, exercise, and just functional movement. And in my
Okay.
head, that's myofunctional therapy. It's diet, nutrition, exercise, functional movement. And if I
Right.
can change a whole body and a whole physique from like an apple shape to like a, you know, or a pear shape to like a fitness model's body, like
Yeah.
change here. Using the same principles, because what do we have? We have bone, we have muscles, we have joint, right? And that's the same in the whole body. So if we can change a we can if we can cause a bodily change, we can cause a change in this area. So in my practice, all ortho patients, all TMD patients, and all sleep patients undergo myo, some kind of myo, right? In our office, we do, you know, the basic limited one, but I work with a lot of myofunctional therapists just like yourself, and my patients love the virtual alternative, the option for that, because it makes it very easy to incorporate it into their schedule and into their lifestyle. So it's really, really good to have myo from the get-go, my belief. Orthodontics, I know expanders and growth and development guidance in children. If I can't get nasal breathing, I'm not going to get a good result. I'm going to be struggling with that case. I know that 100%. So all my cases have changed now since I've realized that. And, you know, I have so many cases that are so difficult. And I'm just like, if I could just go back in time and just do this, you know, there's a compromise, if we can't get it converted to nasal breathing.
Absolutely,
Right.
absolutely.
So, and then the tongue function and all of that stuff, there's a compromise. So if we can get that as early as possible, that'll be great. My TMD patients that are able to nasal breathe, that are able to breathe well in the middle of the night, that are able to get their teeth apart, lips together, muscles more relaxed, they have better responses to the therapies. My sleep patients, that's kind of like a no-brainer already for sleep. I feel like every sleep patient needs to go through myo, even if you're just going to address breathing and oral rest posture. Even just those two. Yeah.
Absolutely. Dr. Weddle, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about before we wrap things up?
I think the this airway, a lot of times, you know, depending on where you are, it's a journey, right? Depending on where we are in our journey, airway could be a very new thing, or airway could be kind of old hat. It could be what we've grown into in the field. And sometimes it's hard if you're in the airway field to start to understand the rest of dentistry who hasn't yet been in the airway field. So I think what I want to, there's two things that I want to impart in that it's like tolerance, you know, tolerance and understanding, and just realize that it's a journey and not everybody will understand your philosophy from the beginning, and not everybody will agree. And you don't, you know, we don't, I just hate arguing. As a profession, I feel like a good discourse and a good discussion, it is always the better way to go. But just understand each other and try to, un instead of wanting to be understood, try to understand where they're coming from. Because I think that would be the beginning of a better conversation.
Absolutely.
Right? Because I think we are in a time frame in our field that it's the development is so fast, and the people that are in the field are just full force and full, you know, like we're
Oh
full
my gosh,
speed
yep.
ahead.
Yep.
And it's like, if you don't agree with me, you're in my way, and I'm just gonna, you know, that's, you know. So I just feel like there's a lot in dentistry, and there's a lot that dentistry has to offer. And if we work together, and just help bring everybody up, I think we'll be all in a better place.
Now, if the
So that.
listeners want to learn a little bit more about ASAP, can you tell them where they can find some more information?
Of course, yeah. So asappathway.com, so airway, sleep, and pediatrics again. And it's for dentists who want to learn the introductory, you know, so it's from a beginner's airway standpoint all the way to an expert's, because we have a community of beginners and experts. And really, It's the continuing education is part of it, but the heart of ASAP is a community because we really try to help each other out. And again, there's no appliance shaming, there's no technique shaming. Everything is welcome. But what we want to stress is the diagnosis, right? What are we doing as dentists? What are we doing as healthcare professionals? And can we diagnose, stay in our lane, diagnose and manage and leave the patient in a better situation and, maybe direct them to other healthcare providers that can help them because we know that this is not a dentistry only problem.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for everything that you shared with us tonight. And thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know you had a long day with patients, so we appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I love this conversation and keep doing all the Mayo stuff because I know we all need it. I know we dentists, I know that we do it in our practice, but I cannot practice without all the independent myofunctional therapists because we have such need. And I'm sure that there's a lot more orthodontists and general dentists that want to incorporate it, feel the need and understand the benefit that just can't do it in their practice. So we just need so many more myofunctional therapists to support us.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your support. You're the best.
Take care. Have a good evening.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of I Spy with My Maya Y. If you want to hear more about these episodes, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or feel free to contact me at hello@myctom.com. Don't forget to subscribe as well and let us know of any subject or guest speaker you'd like to hear from. Help spread the word by sharing today's episode on your social media page. You can find me on Facebook at CT Oral Facial Myology or Instagram handle CT_oralfacial_myology. Everybody have a wonderful day.